יהיו לרצון נמרי פי בגיון לבי לפניך אדוני צורי וגועלי.
May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and my redeemer.
Shalom all, and welcome to this series of classes from the Kosher Torah School. And of course, I am your host, Ariel Baratzadok. You can find us at thekoshertorah.com. Welcome, bienvenidos. Good evening, Erev Tov. I wish I could say it in all the different languages of all the people who join us, but that might take a wee bit too much time. We are presently learning the teachings of the Kabbalah, specifically the teachings of Rabbi Yosef Haim of Baghdad, known to us as the Ben Ish Hai, from his famous Kabbalistic text, Dat Utfuna. We're learning in the 20th chapter, and this is the second lesson in this series, which is dealing with the topic of the Kabbalah of prophecy. In our previous lesson, I gave you an introduction of trying to dispel the mythology of what prophecy is not, so that we can focus exactly on what prophecy is. And in order to give you a proper insight and understanding of what we are dealing with here, we have to go back into the classic authoritative literature and read and see what it has to say and recognize the truth of it for ourselves. So, before I continue to read from Dat Utfuna, where in which the Ben Ish Hai, our author, is quoting from Rabbi Chaim Vital, specifically from his book Sha'arei Kiddusha, The Gates of Holiness, which Rabbi Chaim wrote as a guide, actually, to achieving, if you will, a prophetic spirit. Indeed, the fourth section of that book was deemed so profound that pretty much since the time the book was first published, the fourth section of the book was censored. And it wasn't published, literally, not in the late 1500s, early 1600s when it was written. I believe the first time it was ever published was in the late 1980s, early 1990s. Now, it is readily available. And one of the foundations that we see from that section, where in which Rabbi Chaim Vital, who the Ben Ish Hai is here quoting, is explaining prophecy, much of it from the school of Avraham Abulafia, who we know to be, if you will, the Abba, the father of what we call today the prophetic Kabbalah. Well, I've been teaching the Abulafian system literally for decades now, but what most people do not know, number one, Abulafia was certainly pre-Zoharic. The Neoplatonic metaphysics of Spanish Kabbalah, embraced in the Zoharic school, was foreign to Rabbi Abulafia. Did not deal with it, did not work with it, had a completely different system. Well, where and what system did Abulafia use? Surprisingly, Abulafia made great usage of what, in my opinion, is probably one of the most authoritative books to explain the true secrets of the Torah, Sitrei Torah, as they were truly brought down to us from Talmudic times. And this book also, unfortunately, is terribly misunderstood today. It's called the Pinnacle of Rationalism, where in which, for those who truly know and understand the text, recognize that beneath a rational veneer, this book is dealing with the secrets of creation, the secrets of the chariot, Ma'aseh Bereshit, Ma'aseh Merkava, and the revelations of the author clearly validate and prove that he was a master of the old system, who understood it well and taught it properly. This is what Abulafia also saw and wrote commentaries on. And I have seen people who have chided Abulafia and claimed, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And the original author of whom I'm speaking about doesn't know what he's talking about. Those of that opinion don't know what they're talking about. The author I'm speaking about is none other than Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, known to us as Rambam or Maimonides. And the book that I speak to you about is The Guide to the Perplexed, the Moreh Nebuchim. You can read all the scholarly reviews of the Moreh, and you will find that this is a book of the true secrets of the Torah. And in order for me to introduce, or I should say, in order for me to continue with an understanding of what Rabbi Chaim Vital is going to teach us, again, Rabbi Chaim Vital, Ben Ish Chai, it's all the same right now, what we're going to learn about prophecy, how prophecy is this universal human experience. Well, I have to lay down some foundations. So again, to dispel mythology, so that we can understand things correctly. And in order to do that, I'm going to take you into and expose you to some teachings that I only share with my small group of private students, those who, you know, are the supporters and backbone of our Kosher Torah school, whose classes are not recorded or anything of the kind. But you should know, you know, I have my group. People have been with me for many, many years. And I believe this material is so important that it needs to be shared with you. So before we continue and read about the prophecy, indeed, the section that we're up to right now in chapter 20 of the Da'at Tfuna begins with the words, "Ubezeit ba'er inyan nevuah." Well, now we will explain the matter of prophecy. But before I can explain that, let's go into Rambam. Rambam to Abu Lafia. Abu Lafia to Chaim Vital. Chaim Vital to the Ben Ish Chai. So you see the Masora, the links of the chain. I'm reading to you from the very famous Pines translation of the Guide to the Perplexed. It's volume 2, page 361, for those who have it. It's section 2 of the Guide, chapter 32. Wherein which Rambam enumerates three different views and opinions of prophecy. Well, I'm just going to explain to you rather than the different ideas and get sidetracked. Let's explain what Rambam knows what prophecy is. So pay attention, please. Prophecy is a certain perfection in the nature of man. This perfection is not achieved in any individual from among men, except after a training that makes that which exists in the potentiality of the species pass into actuality, provided an obstacle due to temperament or some external cause does not hinder this, as in the case with regards to every perfection whose existence is possible in a certain species. For the existence of that perfection in its extreme and ultimate form in every individual of that species is not possible. Just a quick note. He's saying here again, prophecy is a certain perfection in the nature of man. All right? This perfection is not achieved except through training, unless, of course, something hinders and blocks it. And what those hindrances and blocks are, Rabbi Chaim is going to describe to us momentarily. But let's continue with our understanding. The existence of this perfection in its extreme and ultimate form in every individual of that species is not impossible. So, ultimate, no. But at least we can accomplish what we can. Now, why is this important to say? Well, many of you who joined me before I begin class know that I always play a medley of some songs. The songs that I play are not just for entertainment, but they are a reflection of the material that we're going to cover in class. One of them that I played was the very famous Moody Blues tune, Nights in White Satin. How many of you are familiar with the lyrics? Nights in White Satin, never reaching the end. That's us, never reaching the end, all right? Letters I've written, never meaning to send, beauty I've always missed with these eyes before. Here's the famous words, just what the truth is, I can't say anymore. Okay? It's a very mystical, profound song if you ever pay attention to it. But let's continue with Rambam. It must, however, exist necessarily in at least one particular individual if, in order to be achieved, this perfection requires something that actualizes it, and that something necessarily therefore exists. So according to this opinion, it is not possible that an ignoramus should turn into a prophet, nor can a man not be a prophet on a certain evening and be a prophet the following morning, as though he made some find. Dispel myth number one. Many of us believe that to be a prophet, you're walking down the street, minding your own business, and all of a sudden you hear the spiritual doorbell go off, ding dong, this is the Lord. Well, that is a misunderstanding of biblical texts. The Bible makes it very, very clear in the books of Samuel that there were schools of prophets, Chul G'Nevi'im, where in which you had to go and be trained how to become a prophet. What kind of training do you think the people received there? Moral and ethical teachings? Everybody got moral and ethical teachings. What does that have to do with prophecy? All right? Everybody is supposed to learn and be moral and ethical. That doesn't mean that everybody is moral and ethical all of a sudden is a prophet. Maybe they learn mystical, magical, special names. No. Torah is not about magic. It's not about hocus pocus. There's no eeny, meeny, eeny, meeny, chili, beeny going on here. Something different. Rambam continues, and I quote again. Things are rather as follows. Here it is. When in the case of a superior individual who is perfect with respect to his rational and moral qualities, his imaginative faculty is in its most perfect state. And when he has been prepared in the way that you will hear, he will necessarily become a prophet, inasmuch as this is the perfection that belongs to us by nature. Did you understand what he just said? Rambam enumerates three different levels that are required of us. And that is, and you will see that in my essays in Kosher Torah on the series called Way of Enlightenment, I'm outlining this. I refer to the enlightenment of the heart and then enlightenment of the mind. Now, what is enlightenment of the deeds? Those are being proper in our behavior. For someone who is of the Jewish faith, it means, of course, the ritual observances of the Jewish religion. For someone who is not of the Jewish faith, those things are not applicable. You would not apply. They're not necessary for you. For example, if you are a male man of the species, I really don't think we have to worry about your supply of sanitary napkins, which obviously might be a very important issue for a woman. Okay? So don't go around thinking, oh, gee whiz, I don't have this or that. There's no difference here. There's a very, very famous legend brought down to us in a book of Midrash called Tana Devei Eliyahu. Eliyahu Rabbah, chapter 9, for those who want a source. Where in which, in the name of none less than Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the prophet, it states, heaven and earth will bear witness, be it a man or a woman, free man or slave, Jew or Gentile, all can receive what is this called Ruach HaKodesh, this prophetic spirit, based upon what they do. And what they do is enumerated here. You obviously must have proper moral qualities, but you must also have a very clear, rational mind. Your mind must have clarity. Your mind must have an ability to scrutinize, analyze, and discern. You see, the heart distinguishes between good and evil. The mind distinguishes between truth and falsehood. There's a difference between the two. We always speak in the Kabbalah about Hamshachat Hamochin, bringing down the brains. We always speak about the brains, the spherotic brains going into the head of Bina, Bina again being the mind. Talmud. Why was the Talmud written? It wasn't written as a code of law. It's not a code of law. You don't learn halakha, Jewish law, from the Talmud. Matter of fact, that's actually a quote from the Talmud itself, Masechet Nida, Eino lomdim halakha mipi gemara. So then, what is the value of Gemara? It sharpens your mind. It sharpens your intellect. And at the same time, sharpens your imagination. For those who have ever studied Talmud, and I encourage everyone to study Talmud, male, female, Jew, Gentile, doesn't matter. It's an excellent, excellent source of sharpening the mind. You will see we go from discussions of ritual law and very, very analytic discussion to a very ethereal discussion of what we call agadata, stories and the ideas. And you go back and forth from intellect to imagination and imagination back to intellect. And it's like this flow of a living river. This was done intentionally so as to sharpen both parts of our minds. That which Rambam is referring to here is the rational and the imaginative faculty. When we can sharpen our minds to think clearly, that's what we call tikkun sefirat habina. And when we can properly allow our imaginations to flow within the complement of our intellect, that's what we call the tikkun hachokhmah. Those are the mochin that the Ari is always speaking about. And they both must be refined properly. This is what they learned in the school of the prophets. This is what Rambam says here again. This perfection, he says, you will necessarily become a prophet because this perfection belongs to us by nature. In other words, those who walk this path, regardless of who they are, if they accomplish this level of mental accomplishment, what I write and call my material, enlightenment of the mind, they will achieve prophecy. That's what Rambam says here. It belongs to us by nature. According to this opinion, it's not possible that an individual should be fit for prophecy and be prepared for it and not become a prophet. Except to the extent to which it's possible, an individual having a healthy temperament should be nourished with excellent food, without sound blood and similar things that being generated from that food. One of the other requirements of prophecy is that you have to have a healthy body, healthy mind, and a healthy body. I always tell people that if you truly wish to become prophetically sensitive, you have to be strong. You have to exercise. Rambam writes about this. All the prophetic teachings write about this. You can't be infirmed or weak. No, it doesn't mean you can't be old. I mean, good gosh. I mean, the prophets were, you know, 100 plus years old. It's not like they were running marathons. But they were healthy. Healthy within a context. They didn't smoke. They didn't drink. They weren't obese. Remember, if you're 5-10 pounds overweight or something, that's not a big deal. But they understood a new health. Rambam, of course, our doctor, understood this too. Therefore, when we have the rectification of the body, rectification of the heart, rectification of the mind, all right, enlightenment of the body, physical health, enlightenment of the heart, correct midot, attributes, personality, character, rectification of the mind, sharp thinking. By nature, your mind should become open to the spirit of prophecy. Now, Rambam states that there's only one difference here. Every now and then, even though we are ready for this, if God decides not to speak to us, well, sometimes we just don't get the message. So it is dependent upon heaven. But yet there's more to the story than just this. You see, also have to quote to you from a later chapter in the Moreh Nebuchim. Did I just lose my place? How could I have lost my place? Where is the chapter? Oh, I hate wasting time like this. I have all my notes here, but I gotta find which one it is. There we go. Thank you. Chapter 34. Okay. Prophecy is a natural state to be developed by any human being. Let's accept that as our premise. Now, what exactly do we expect to happen? Again, we have a myth that we expect we would go into some kind of a trance. Fine, our minds are now clear, our behavior is clear, our bodies are healthy. Just give me the mystical, magical mantras, and all of a sudden I'm going to do all this and God's going to come and talk to me, right? No, wrong. A point that Maimonides makes very clear in chapter 34. And I'll just quote to you the basic words, okay? Prophetic revelation comes through an angel. Know this. Prophetic revelation comes through an angel. Why? How? Because that is the way and path of God. Prophetic revelation comes through an angel. Know this, he says. Okay? I'm saying that a number of times. No one speaks to God directly. Look into the Bible. Look at the prophets. Let's leave Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, out of this. Let's just look at every other prophet. You find this strange experience, and the angel of the Lord appeared, and then God spoke. Well, where did God come from? Well, apparently the angel of the Lord comes and serves as the mouthpiece, the apparatus through which God speaks. I mentioned this yesterday, called the angel, if you will, like the divine telephone. But now, I'm not going to get into all the details right now, but those who are interested can go back into the guide, section 2, chapter 6. And read, what is an angel? Oh, I know what an angel is, right? Isn't he one of those 50-foot tall guys, you know, who wears the white togas and wears, you know, the Teva sandals and he's got big wings, right? I've seen him. Wrong. The Bible, all the more so later Talmudic and all the more so later Kabbalistic literature makes very clear. Everything can be a messenger from God. Everything can bring a message. The word for angel in Hebrew, as we know, is malach, which means a messenger. And scripture says, even the winds are messengers from God. A point that Maimonides makes then, section 2, chapter 6 of the guide. The forces of nature themselves are messengers from God, are angels. You understand the significance? If you can qualify yourself to the spirit of prophecy, which you can, it's possible, everyone can, naturally you'll be attuned to communing with an angel who will not take the form of some guy with wings and a toga, but can be in every single form in nature. In other words, everything in nature will speak to you. Everything in nature will communicate to you the way and path of God. What Maimonides is describing to us is something very profound. Real prophecy is what in other languages called God consciousness, becoming aware of the presence and the way and the will of God in everything. This is what is called enlightenment in the Eastern traditions, wherein which, when the winds blow, you will know the will of God. In the Taoist tradition of the Chinese, they call this the Tao, knowing the Tao, living and walking with the way. We have the echo of this in our Torah tradition, in the book of Kohelet Ecclesiastes, where it says there's a time and a purpose for all things under heaven. Time for this, a time for that. You have to know the times. In the Sefer Yetzirah, it focuses on knowing these times. Only after it teaches us in the first chapter with the concept of the Sefirot, of sensing the different realms of the mind. The reason why the Sefer Yetzirah goes through all of the letter exercises is to cultivate perfection of thought. So therefore, I encourage you. Well, in religion, we always place focus on morals and ethics, enlightenment of the heart. We have to take the next step to enlighten the mind. So this is why you'll find in books like Duties of the Heart and Rambam and others, where it says that we're supposed to learn the natural sciences. Rambam says these natural sciences are the secrets of creation, the Maaseh Bereshit, one of the great schools of the original secrets of the Torah, before they were veiled with a cloak of Neoplatonic philosophy in Spanish Kabbalah. These are the truths. This is why this is real. Now, you get in touch. You get in tuned. You understand. Now, with this understanding, with this foundation, let's go into our Data Tfuna and read further what Rabbi Chaim has to say so that we can understand Rabbi Chaim Vital, who the Ben Ish Chai is quoting, from the sources and understandings that he himself had. And I quote, Ki ahar hayota adam bechomer zach b'li zuhumat yetzir hara. Once a man can purify himself, right? So that he has none of the contaminations of the evil inclination or the forces of the natural soul. Natural soul. That's a philosophical term. We've discussed this in numerous other classes. Maimonides also will make reference of it. And we discuss what this natural soul is. It's the natural focus of what we would call human consciousness upon our physical, external environment. I have a physical stomach. It gets hungry. So I pay focus on eating. Okay? Who's in charge? Me or my tummy? All right? I see things that are scrumptious and delicious. Candy, chocolate, ice cream, pizza, whatever, whatever. Who's in control? My tummy or my mind? Think about it. Is there anything wrong with having a small piece of chocolate? No. Is there anything wrong with having a lot of chocolate? Yes. Think about it. Is there anything wrong with the act of sexuality? Well, within the proper context of marriage and the like? No. Within the context of immoral or inappropriate behavior? Yes. So it's not so much the act, it's the application of the act within a context. We today in our society do not think. We're taught to feel. And because people do not think, they are subject to what we call here the evil inclination, or the powers of your foundational soul. That's a problem, because that will always cloud and hinder your mind. And that is why people today have no God consciousness, also known as Ruach HaKodesh, the divine inspiration, or, to sum it up easy, prophecy. Okay? Let's not mince words here. Let's just be generic. But that's what it is. So when you hear me railing for the last 20 years about how you have to be healthy, how you have to be, you know, moral character, intellectual development, why you have to be sharp, why you have to think, That's what this is all about. This is why this is important. For those who are familiar with the martial arts, the reason why the martial arts are so important is not because they are about martial violence, self-defense, or anything of the kind. It's actually a system of discipline. Discipline of the body, discipline of the emotions, discipline of the mind. For those who are familiar with the Taoist traditions, the Shaolin traditions, the Bushido traditions, fundamentally, they all teach a very similar system of discipline. And it's in the discipline that sharpens and hones the individual and makes them wise. And that, again, going back to Maimonides. Now let's go back to Rabbi Chaim Vital. V'lo yesh biyado chet hapogem be'eze shoresh meshoresh nishmato. Also, one should not have, he says in his hands, any sin that would blemish your connection with the source of your soul. Source of your soul. Don't we're talking about connecting to God here? What's the relationship? Well, let's find out. Hine ka'asher yachin atzmo lidabek. When you're preparing yourself to bond with what? Ad shorosho ha'elyon, to your supernal source. Yuchol lidabek bo. Then you cling to your supernal soul. Even if you're worthy of it, you still have to separate your he says here, your soul, but it means your mind, from all the things of this world. From all the physical things, concerns of this world, separate. Then you cling to your source above. We discussed this in our previous class about how we have a five-level soul, nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, and yechida. The nefesh, ruach, and neshama in the realms of consciousness. The chaya and the yechida in the realms of the unconscious. When we talk about God consciousness, divine inspiration, and the like, what we're talking about is connecting to our own higher selves that exists outside of the domain of consciousness and therefore connects us into the hive mind of collective humanity. What the Lurianic Kabbalah says, all souls in Adam. When we connect to our source in the collective, that is how we tap into the greater whole. This is what was referred to often in Jungian psychology as a noumenosim, a noumenostic experience, wherein which one has a insight of connection, which each individual interprets to be somehow in some way an experience of the divine. And this explains psychologically why each and every culture that cultivates this type of psychological experience experiences within the context of their own religion, ethnicity, and culture. So therefore, a Catholic might have a vision of the Virgin Mary, Protestant of Jesus, and Islamic tradition maybe of Jabril or something similar. In Hinduism, they would see Krishna, and Buddhism, they would see Buddha, and Judaism, you'd see Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Eliyahu Navi, whatever, whatever. That is explaining why each and every one sees within a context. And religious polemics tries to point the finger and say, yeah, well, my experience is the, if you allow me to use the Hebrew word, kosher one, and everyone else's is all lies and satanic and this and that. No, sorry, you don't understand it. Like Maimonides said, this is a natural experience. But this natural experience, as Maimonides makes very clear in his Yesodei Torah, in the Mishnah Torah itself, goes through the filter of the human mind. In Kabbalistic literature, we call this filter of the human mind the Espek Luria She'ena Mi'ira, the mirror which does not reflect clearly. It's a symbol meaning that your mind receives things in its form and structure, which is unique to you. And therefore, you have to understand your own mind and thought, to understand your own individual and personal symbolisms. And that's the, well, gosh, I've been talking about things like this since I wrote my first book, Call Upon My Name, back in, what, 1990-something or wherever. Connecting to your own higher self. That's the doorway that connects us to God. We said that a spark of God enters into what we call this yechida level of our highest soul. That's what he calls here, the source above. And then that speaks to us. It's correlating the same exact type of pattern that we read in Lurianic Kabbalah of the light of the Ein Sof going into Adam Kadmon, from Adam Kadmon going into the outer worlds. Same pattern. But this is how we understand this, and this is the psychology of it. In other words, stripping away the fantasy and the mythology, we can do this if we make the effort of cultivating the powers of our mind. Just earlier today, I was speaking to somebody who's actually in class right now. He's asking me about deeper meditations. And I told him, wait for the class tonight. Well, you know who you are, and this is your message. You don't need to learn mystical, magical, this book or that book. Your answer of what you seek is not in a book. It's not in a technique. It's in your mind. It's in your ability to learn what I call mental kung fu. Let's continue. Hine inyan ahitpashatut hazeh. This matter of this radiance is what we're calling it. Shetimsakatu b'kol ha'sfarim, that's written about in all the books with regards to the matters of prophecy and Ruach HaKodesh. All right, how this all happens. Hitpashtut mamashi. We're talking about the radiance itself. Shehaneshama yotze me'agufo mamash ki'inyan ha'sheina. All right, many people interpret and think that what is the spirit of prophecy? That your soul actually leaves your body, like as if you were going and sleeping. Like people interpret that the spirit of prophecy is astral projection, and that you're actually going off somewhere on the other side of the rainbow. But Rabbi Chaim, quoting the Ben Ish Chai again, says right here, she'en o she'im ken, en zo nevuah. That would not be prophecy. Rather, that would be a dream like all the other dreams. He states here, and pay attention, Hasharat Ruach HaKodesh. This divine inspiration, this God consciousness of what we are speaking. Hu b'hayot ha'neshama b'gufo b'haketz. This occurs where your soul is in your body while you are awake. V'lo tetze memeno. It doesn't leave you. You're not going off anywhere. You're right here. And you recognize the wisdom, the hand of God invisible in all things around you. Remember, I've always shared with you numerous classes where we have all kinds of disturbances, whether it's satellite internet connection problems, the dogs are barking, all right, this, that, whatever. I say to you, I don't believe in distractions. I believe that everything has a purpose. Like it says, there's a time and a place for all things under heaven. I can't control satellite internet connection. I can't control the dogs barking. But somehow, some way, if any of these things happen, there's a reason and a purpose for it. What is that reason and purpose? I don't know. But maybe if I pay attention, I might ascribe some meaning to it. Now, I'm going to introduce to you a topic, an idea. And I want to be very careful that we understand this correctly. In Jungian psychology, there is something called synchronicity. It means to synchronize, connecting something from inside to outside, meaning inside the mind to outside in the world. What this means is this. Somehow, some way, something can happen in the world. Whatever it is, a branch blows up against your window. I gave this example before. Now, what does that mean? It means nothing. It means a branch blew up against your window. But let's say somehow, somewhere, something is in turmoil inside you. You're thinking about something, you're feeling something, and all of a sudden something happens, and all of a sudden, bingo, that has a meaning to you. A personal interpretation, which is almost like a communication to you. Jung would call that a synchronicity, syncing up, aligning some external thing with some internal meaning. That is your Ruach HaKodesh. That is your God consciousness. That is your message. Yeah, it's really that simple. And when the mind is clear and rational can understand this. Why do I say rational? Because I want to emphasize not to succumb to superstitions or fear or the mystery of confusion and clouded thinking. Many people will interpret things as signs, right? If all of a sudden I flip a coin, I do this or that, it means that. Or if I'm walking in with my walking stick and it drops, oh, that's a sign of something. The Code of Jewish Law, Shulchan Aruch, states very clearly, we don't rely on those things. No. Nothing like that at all. But yet, sometimes some things can mean something. Sometimes some things, they don't. How do you know the difference? Analyze. Use your intellect. Now, you might say, well, using my intellect, I can dismiss that this thing might have significance to me. That's correct, you might. But yet at the same time, you put a question mark, not an exclamation point to the matter. Maybe it means this, maybe it doesn't. But you act with rational intelligence rather than superstitious fears. Unfortunately, much of religion today is bound up in superstition and fears. This is what we call a chet, hapogem. This is a sin that blemishes the mind and forever keeps people away from truly understanding and seeing God. And all they see are fears and superstitions. We have to rise above that. So continuing here. Inyan hitpashatut. This matter of this expression, radiance of the soul, all this light and stuff. Hu yesod kol machshavotav. Ki yasir kol machshavotav legamre. You have to literally divorce your mind from all type of external concerns. V'hakoach hamidameh shebo. Shehu koach nimshach me'hanefesh hachaya hayesodit shebo yafsikuhu me'lidamot ulachshov ulahaher b'shum inyan me'inyanei olam hazeh. You have the power of your imagination. Koach hamedame. And this is the power which comes from that level of so-called the chaya. Chaya is the world of chokhmah, the unconscious. You have to allow your imagination to withdraw from and think and contemplate only higher spiritual things and not things from this world. Ki ilu yatsa nafsho memeno, as if your mind or your soul has separated from you. Ve'az yafoch koach hamedameh machshavotav, then you will be able to transform your power of imaginations and your thoughts from imagining and imaging ki'ilu ole ba'olamot ha'elyonim, as if you are ascending into the supernal worlds, b'shoreshei nafsho, to the source of your soul, asher lo sham meze leze, from one world to the next, ad shtegia, until you get to a level, tzi'ur dimyano b'makor shlo, until you can actually like have a vision or an image internally of your own supernal source above. And then you're visualizing in your imagination all these supernal lights in your mind, as if you're you know imagining them, and you're seeing them within the power of your personal imagination,
afapi she'eno ra'e otam ki'eno da b'chokhmat ha'teva,
All right? And you're visualizing again the supernal world as if you were imagining this physical world in accordance to all natural things. That's a mouthful. That's a handful. What are we talking about? You want a handful of it? You want to know? Go read all the ascent literature of the Merkaba schools, where in which the ascenders would use all kinds of chants and mantras, which enabled their minds to create an internal reality which was so comprehensively different and unique from external reality that they visualized themselves in different ways and different places. And they were able to visualize the higher worlds. And yet each one saw these higher worlds uniquely within the context of their own personality. And that is why when you look at Merkaba literature, starting with Enochian literature, going through Talmudic literature, through later Hechalot literature, it's all different. Put them side by side. They're all different. How can that be? I thought these guys were ascending to the same worlds. How come everybody sees a different world? It's because they're all imagining it differently. They are all, in quote, ascending. Or if we use the correct term in our meditative process, we call it Yorde HaMerkaba. Indeed, Maimonides makes a very interesting point. When we call an aliyah an ascent, that's an aliyah, an ascent into the domain of the intellect. When we refer to the yerida, the descent, we're referring to depths into the unconscious. One goes into the light, one goes into the dark. You always go down into the dark of the unconscious to extract it and bring it into the light. Everybody in the mental health profession, you know what I'm talking about. This is the great secret here. This is what Sefer Yetzirah course teaches. This is what I wrote in Call Upon My Name. I teach again in Walking in the Fire about the power of imagination. One of the great simple tools that we use, of course, is an item called a Shiviti. It's an artwork where which you put God's name and all kinds of different holy names and stuff like that. It's to cultivate the power of the imagination. All the holy names and the angels and the like, even the use of the 72 triads, is all the power of the imagination to focus on a different reality and to allow the mind to embrace that alternate reality until it becomes real within one's mind. You might remember the example given by Chuang-Tzu. Remember the guy who slept and dreamed that it was a butterfly? Okay? You have to, in quote, go into a vision. Instead of thinking yourself as a butterfly, thinking yourself flying up to heaven. And when you come back, are you a man who dreamt he was a butterfly? Or maybe you're really a butterfly dreaming you're a man. This is the bonding and the merging of what we call Chochman Bina. This is the oscillating consciousness, Sechel Tenuda. This is what we're talking about here. Continuing, we write, except I should say it's written. V'az yachshov, then think. V'yichaven likabel or. Mina esa sefirot, then contemplate that you are going to receive the light of the 10 sefirot. Me'oto anikuda asher shoresh nishmato nehaz sham. Where does this light of the 10 sefirot come from? It comes from that one point that is the connection of your source, of your higher soul, and where it connects above. V'yachaven la'alot gamet esa sefirot zo lezo. Visualize, he says, meditate upon raising up the 10 sefirot one after the other till they rise up to the Ein Sof. V'yamshich lehem ha'aram esham, and you're drawing forth radiance down from the Ein Sof upon them all the way down ad lamata derech yirida ad sofan, till you bring it all the way down. He's giving you a mental technique here. Visualize this, he says. V'kasher yoreda or al yado alehem, when you're bringing down this light upon all the spherot and lower worlds, hem smichim beze, and the whole worlds rejoice. Umiriim ba'oto or shem shichel shorash nishmato nehazit behem. And again, everything is rejoicing about this great light that you're able to bring down from the source of your soul, which from where everything clings to, kafia hedek haro'uila, which is appropriate for you. V'chaven lo'orid derech yirida me'madrega le'madrega. You're visualizing, bringing down this supernal light from level to level until ad sh'yagia ha'or v'ha'shefa ha'hu ad nefesh ha'sichelit shebegufo. You're bringing this down to where? You're bringing it down into your rational intellect in your head, your conscious mind, called your nefesh ha'sichelit. Misham tegiat nefesh ha'chaya, and then it goes into your, again, we call this hayaso, your imagination, the koach midabeshabo, and the power of your imagination. I'll explain this in a minute. Let's finish the paragraph. Visham yitz'eru ha'inyanim ahem. That's where you will visualize all these different matters. Tziur gashmi b'kocho ha'medame, as if you're visualizing actual things in the power of your imagination. V'az yavinam, then you will understand them. Ki'ilu ro'e otam ba'ayim mamash, as if you're actually seeing them into your own eye. What he is saying is you go off into your mind. You try to visualize, imagine higher realms of light, of insight, until these higher realms of insight bring into your mind, into your intellect, into your imaginative faculty, revelation. So you can be thinking about something and allow your mind to, if you will, go off, daydream, if you will, visualizing all kinds of supernal things as your imagination will allow you, with the intent that you are pursuing insight. And allow this imagination to pursue the insight until it comes down into your nefesh ha-sichlit, your conscious mind. And allow your conscious mind to imagine. Allow your imagination to make correlations. We call this in psychology active imagination. And allow your mind to free think, free form, free flow. And all of a sudden, boom, 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 all of a sudden things are going to start to take form in your mind. Pictures are going to, and all of a sudden you're going to have that light bulb experience over your head. I see it now. We can all do this. Rambam says it's natural for us to do it. It can come through anything and everywhere. And that bing, bing, bing light bulb moment, that is your angel, higher self, spiritual guide, talking to you. As Rabbi Chaim continues here, Lefamim oto ha'or sheyored, sometimes this light that comes down, yitza'er bekoach ha'midamei, in the power of your imagination, will take the form, kedemut malach hadober bo, will take the form of an angel talking to you. Now, Abba Lafia uses that same type of language in his Sefer HaCheshek. He says, when you're doing the visualizations of the meditations of the names of God, sit there and visualize some guy talking to you. Wait for him to talk to you. I've always shared with you, I wrote this in Call Upon My Name and elsewhere. And when you visualize the letters Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, I tell you, don't just look at them. Talk to them. Go up to the Yud in your mind. Hi, Yud, what's going on? Let the Yud talk to you. Have a conversation. Allow your imagination to run wild. Be discretionary with your intellect. Really. Chat with it like you would, if you allow me to use the Torah term, Chavaruta. Have a intellectual conversation, all in your mind. You will be surprised how enlightening it is when you let your mind go. That's what it means, removing yourself from all these physical things here. So, he says here, Ro'e oto o shomea kolo. You can get to the point in your imagination where you'll either see this entity or you'll hear its voice, v'kei yotzei, me'achad me'achamish achushim, as if it is communicating with you through your five senses, all this through your natural senses, through your imagination. And from there, you could see that all these things, as if they're actually realistically happening to you. then you will actually like see or hear or smell or speak in all of your like physical senses itself. This is what it means. Ruach Hashem diber bi. The Spirit of God speaks within me. Umilato al lishoni. And his words are upon my tongue. It was in many times that a prophet literally would go into this state of mind, visualize as if an angel is talking to him, as if that angel would be taking over its own mouth, and literally speak through his own voice. Very similar to what we call channeling. Channeling can be from the imagination, and it can be false, it can be true. It all depends on how clear the mind and how clear the heart. Now, I give you one caveat of warning here. Because ultimately, what's going to come out of your mind or out of your mouth or out of your heart is going to be a reflection of what's inside you. This is why Rabbi Chaim stated, you know, if you have blemishes, it's going to blemish you. Rabbi Chaim says people who do this, they have klipa. Klipa means husks or shells, shadows of the mind, shadows of consciousness, shadows of emotions. This is the foundation of where the biblical experience of false prophecy came from. We have false visions to this very day. It's all depending on the purity of the individual. And that's why refinement, not only refinement of your behavior and your heart, but refinement of your mind. Clarity, very important. He states, Ki itka Shem yitzta'er ha'or ahu b'chushim ha'gashmim. You visualize this as if it's actually happening in your physical senses. Example of this was in the book of Daniel. Daniel is having a vision. He's seeing all kinds of weirdo stuff. And all the guys around him are looking at him thinking, what's going on with this guy? But he's having an experience. We have a midrashic example of this with Rabbi Nehunya ben Akana, where in which he was summoned by the sages. And he was sitting there in a trance, going through all this stuff in his mind. And they had to knock him out of it. They did it in a subtle way, as the midrash states there. But anyway, lefamim tiyeh nevuato b'chamisha chushim aruchneim asher b'koach medamei bilvad. Sometimes this prophetic experience will be within your spiritual senses, within your imagination alone. But this is only going to happen if you're able to separate and remove your imagination from all the powers of thinking of all the outside external world. Okay. We're kind of running short on time here, so I'm going to leave it at that. Separating from the world. No, you don't have to go live off into a cave and do all this other kind of weirdo stuff. It's all a matter of mind. Everything is a matter of refinement of the mind. Again, this is why we study Talmud. Talmud sharpens the mind. And those with a sharp mind are able to control their mind. Martial arts. Sharp mind. Control of mind. Discipline. Maimonides states, discipline of body, discipline of heart, discipline of mind. Those who accomplish this will naturally be inclined to experience this connection. Follow the pattern, follow the path. This is a psychological phenomenon. It is universal and it is applicable to all human beings. This is the psychology of prophecy. And this is very important because this is the reality of spirituality, the reality of all spiritual experience, why it is applicable to all of us. And as Rambam says, the natural process for all of it belongs to all of us. So we're not talking here religion. We're not even talking here philosophy. We're talking here about us. Our minds, our psychology, our potential to connect to the greater world. It's all in our hands. God's blessings, I pray, will be on each and every one of us to do just this. Let's call it a night. Thank you again all for joining me for this, our second class in this series in the Kabbalah Prophecy. With God's blessings, we'll pick up and continue in our next class next time. Thanks again. Thank you again all for your support of the Kosher Torah School. Remember, it is because of your financial support and donations for us that I'm able to be here for you, that we're able to be here for one another. Thank you again. God bless. Shalom.